Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, January 12, 2015. And with me today, I have the always full of energy, Kelly Gumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good. And the man with energy, but sometimes kept in a safe place, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
Yeah. Who are you talking about? Good to be here. Thank you, Jeff.
It's great to have both you guys here.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's also great that we survived CES and we are all safely back in the TMO Towers studio where we can record from the comfort of our own chairs.
You know, I quipped once that Las Vegas was this surreal monument to things that never were. And I think I said it a little bit differently, but it's good to be out of that place.
Yeah. You know, I'm totally cool with going there occasionally for trade shows and conferences. I've never had an interest in going there relaxation.
It's a curious place. It's a curious place. But it was a good show. It's good to be back. So yay.
Yay. Go us.
Awesome.
All right. The first thing that I wanted to look at today is this whole thing with the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, suing AT&T because AT&T has been throttling the bandwidth for their customers that have unlimited wireless data plans. Now, if you bought an original iPhone and never switched the way your contract works, you have unlimited data.
Now, you could also get in on that with the iPhone 3G, the second generation iPhone, if you got one very early, which is how I ended up with my unlimited data plan.
And we should put quotes around unlimited.
Right, yeah. Because that's pretty much what AT&T is doing. So if you hit the – it's around the 5 gig mark a month.
Mm-hmm. I think it's data. More like 2.
It depends, I think, on where you are. What the last wave of this that came out that I had heard was that it was if you're in the top 5% in your area.
Ah, right.
So in L.A., it may be way higher than it is in Portland. You know, in New York, it may be higher than it is in Omaha. If you're at the high end in the kind of metro area where you're located, then that's what gets you throttled. The other interesting thing about clinging to this unlimited data plan, which is what my house has done through the iPhone 6 that Mr. Kelly currently carries, is you know all that cool crap that they showed you at WWDC with the handoff and the continuity and the hotspot and whatnot? You don't get to do any of that. So that's why I've been pretty okay with not upgrading to Yosemite, because all that stuff that they showed off that you can do, like get the text messages on your computer and all that, I can't do any of that.
Really?
Yeah, because if you have unlimited, you don't have personal hotspot.
Oh, that's right, because to get a personal hotspot, you have to change your plan.
Yeah, you can't be an unlimited data customer and have personal hotspot.
Yeah.
How much of your data do you use, Miss I work out of the house?
We go through quite a bit because Mr. Kelly has no Wi-Fi in his office. So anything that he does during the day ends up being data. And then like on weekends and stuff when we're not home, it's all data all the time. And like he will stream Pandora on his commute to and fro and stuff. So collectively we do chew through a fair amount of it.
And the nice thing,
I know he has complained about it being slow. I have times when it's fine and times when the speed really sucks. And
so yes, it gets throttled.
I think so, but I can't guarantee that because sometimes it's like, you know, in 15 minutes, then it's all fine again. So I can't say for sure. The whole reason that we stuck to it is because we have AT&T. and I know what overages look like from AT&T. And so the whole reason we kept it is because there's no way that they can charge me for an overage on an unlimited data plan.
You'd rather deal with the throttling than the potential for a big bill.
Yes, because I know it's going to always cost me $35 a month, and that's an important thing to know.
And that's what AT&T is counted on, which takes us back to Jeff.
Wow, that was excellent, Brian. Well done. Okay, so people like you, Kelly, are occasionally getting throttled.
Yes.
And the FTC is like, whoa, Nelly, you can't do this. to your unlimited data customers.
Uh-huh. Now, this is the FTC, right? The
Federal Trade Commission.
Okay. Right.
So
they regulate commerce. They're not regulating necessarily this industry, which is what the FCC would be doing.
Yeah, they're regulating business practices.
Right, and they're calling this a deceptive business practice.
Which it totally is.
Because it is.
Yeah. So now AT&T, they get slapped with a lawsuit by the FTC.
Yes.
And AT&T...
Go consumer protection.
Right, but then AT&T counters with, whoa, dudes, you can't sue us. You don't have jurisdiction over us. And their reasoning is because they are a common carrier under the Title II regulations.
Oh, my God.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Didn't you write up some pieces, some news late last year, where they were fighting that exact thing?
As did Kelly.
Yes. So here's where the delicious irony comes in. AT&T is claiming for this purpose that they are a Title II common carrier, and yet at the same time they are fighting to keep the FCC, Federal Communication Commission, from classifying them as a common carrier, which would then give the FCC the ability to more easily regulate net neutrality and make sure that companies like AT&T and Verizon and Comcast don't do the thing where they're charging Netflix just so that your data stream gets to you.
Well,
so let's break this down.
Company.
Let's break this down just real quick. Like, I just want to run it down. What common carrier means is common carrier would get them treated like a utility, like the light company, the phone company. You know, they would be that kind of thing. They would be just sort of a utility, and it would be like paying your water bill. And, you know, the water people, the water company, wherever it is that you are, doesn't get to dictate, like, we made a deal to get water from this place. And so, you know, so this other company that wants to also deliver water isn't going to be able to do so unless they write us a big fat check. That is... When you put the water company in there, it sounds stupid. When you put TV in there, it's business. And the reason it's business is because that hasn't been regulated the same way as other utilities like electricity and water and sewer systems and things like that. So what's happened is the whole net neutrality, and when you hear about last year, you heard about things like SOPA and PIPA and different kinds of stuff that I know Jeff and I have both written up multiple pieces about. When you talk about net neutrality and common carrier and things, this would be forcing them to compete as competitors, which is good for customers and it's terrible for them because it means they can't charge sky-high rates for sucky bandwidth, and it means that they would be called into account for things instead of just being able to write it off as, look how good our business is. They would actually have to account for, why are you charging people so much and giving them so little? As a utility, you're not allowed to do that. So it's kind of interesting to me to watch them do this both at the same time, say, you can't do this because we're common carrier, and then at the same time treat common carrier like it's a dirty word.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like cojones on that company.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I'm expecting that that the way AT&T is presenting their argument, it may fly in court. And if it does, that kills the FTC's case.
But it turns them into a utility.
Well, it doesn't turn them into a utility, but
it makes it a lot easier to call them that if
the people that can turn them into a utility, though, will have additional information for doing so.
Sure, and you can bet that if the FCC team that's working on putting all this together is worth what they're being paid, then they would absolutely glom onto this argument and say, look, we don't get why companies like AT&T are fighting what we're doing. They're already considering themselves a common carrier. We're just making it official.
Yeah, they're already relying on it in other venues.
Right, so they should be able to take advantage of all the benefits that go along with it.
I like it. Now, it is possible. AT&T is not a poorly run company. As a matter of fact, they're actually a fairly well run company if your sole goal is focusing on making a lot of money. Right?
They're not stupid.
They're not stupid people. Randall Stephenson is not a stupid man. His attorneys are excellent attorneys. It is quite possible that AT&T is very comfortable with the idea of saying one thing in one venue and another thing in another venue and being able to get away with it.
And yeah, they're paying people a lot, the attorneys, a lot of money to come up with really good ideas. So mm-hmm. it's a safe bet that if they were willing to throw down Title II common carrier as a defense against the FTC, they've thought this through. And they know or are reasonably certain that this is not going to impact their ability to
make money.
To make money and to stop the FCC from reclassifying them.
Maybe they think it's a fair trade. If we're common carrier, then we avoid all these other things, and maybe they gain. Maybe there's something to be gained by AT&T.
They're desperate to not be classified.
Yeah, they do. They do not want to be a common carrier.
I'll make popcorn. I can't wait to see how this turns out.
Make your popcorn. Yeah. So there you go. I can't wait to see how this plays out either. And it's a drama. It's like a soap opera on the web. And we have a sponsor this week, lynda.com. That's lynda.com. If you're not familiar with them, well, you should be, because they produce some really great online training that you can sign up for and learn just pretty much anything you can imagine. They have a lot of really great courses available. Say you want to learn how to code for the Mac or for the iPhone and iPad. You can learn that. They have Swift Training Essentials classes. They have classes on how to speed up and maintain your computer. They have classes for graphic designers and for business professionals. They have a lot of really great stuff out there. And what they're doing for you, our dear listeners, is offering you a 10-day free trial so that you can test it out and see if the courses they're offering will be of any value to you. So head over to lynda.com, lynda.com/TDO, and you can sign up for your free 10-day trial. And during those 10 days, you can eat up as much as you can possibly soak into your head and learn just all kinds of amazing things and end up being better for it in the end. I've played around with lynda.com classes in the past. I've tried out some of their courses on graphic design and page layout because that's an area I'm really familiar with, and I wanted to see just what the quality was. And I was really, really impressed. They have some of the top names in the industry, for whatever that industry may be, putting together all of these classes for you. So go ahead and check it out, lynda.com, lynda.com/TDO, and get your 10-day free trial. Okay, another thing I wanted to take a look at today, and I call this the Kelly validation segment of the show. So, Kelly, you have said on several occasions, you've talked about it on Daily Observations, you've written articles about how Apple TV, Apple's little black box that connects to your television and gives you streaming content, would be a perfect platform for a HomeKit home automation hub. And as it turns out, it appears that a lot of companies that were at CES making HomeKit compatible gear or working on making HomeKit compatible gear were saying that if you want to use Siri voice control when you're away from home to turn off the lights or change the temperature or whatever, you need to have an Apple TV. That's a requirement. So it becomes a HomeKit hub for remote access.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you over the sound of me being right. Sorry.
Yeah, so now this doesn't mean you have to have an Apple TV. If you're sitting in your home and you pick up your iPhone and you say, "Hey Siri, turn on the lights." Mm. Now the awesome thing is, one of our listeners, their lights just came on.
And this also wouldn't affect any of the various pieces that we've seen smart the socket bulbs, smart whatever. Right. That will communicate with an app on your iPhone.
Correct. Yeah. And any remote control that you have through an app will continue to function just like it always has. So mm-hmm. No need for that, home hub for that. This is just so that you can get Siri into the mix remotely.
Right. And here's the thing is that right now, if you are somebody who enjoys automating your home like me, you have a little folder on your phone of all the apps it takes because there's one for the garage door opener and one for the lights and one for the Wemo and one for the sprinkler and one for the thing and one for the thing and one for the and on and on and on. And this is honestly why I was excited to get multiple pages in a folder, because I have like 3 pages of apps that is just the things that I use to run stuff in my house. And so being able to do this with Siri, and what I'm hoping will ultimately happen with Siri is the way that it was portrayed at WWDC when HomeKit was announced, where you can say, hey, Siri, it's time for bed, and a number of things will happen. Like, it's sort of like having a macro where the thermostat drops down a couple of notches and maybe the lights in the rest of the house turn off, but the one in the bedroom turns on and, you know, certain other stuff. Maybe it'll even come all the way full circle back to iOS. And, you know, when you say it's time for bed, it automatically sets your alarm for the next morning, make sure it's on. Having this kind of capability is going to be awesome as soon as people start taking advantage of it. And it sounds like this year at CES, there actually was some of that that was happening. And the cool thing about this is that a lot of stuff doesn't need a hub, where that didn't used to be the case, which means it's going to be even easier for people to get into. And I'm excited about this. So I want to know if there was stuff that you guys saw that was HomeKit friendly that you're interested in that looked notable to you. Did you see anything while you were there?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because the people we both talked to at CES were all like, yeah, you know, we're looking at HomeKit.
Yeah, you know, we saw a lot of indifference to HomeKit.
Yeah, we're not doing that yet. But other folks apparently talked to folks who thought differently.
Well, and I've seen like a few things. There's the iDevice switch. That was one of them. And
it's a good looking switch, by the way.
Yeah, it does. It does look cool. And then iHome, I think, announced something. And I've seen email from Chamberlain about the MyQ garage door opener, because it's supposed to let you do that. Now, they have that now. They have a little thing that you can buy to slap onto your Chamberlain garage door opener that will allow you to open it with an app on your phone. I have that. So what I'm hoping is that once HomeKit comes to that, then I'm going to be able to build on the HomeKit stuff and be able to do other things besides just launch the app and open the door and then, you know, launch the app and close the door. That maybe I can have some sort of like, hey Siri, I'm leaving now, and have it open the door for me and then, you know, do other stuff. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to string more stuff together. I know that we saw, I didn't hear anything official about HomeKit, but I saw that Nest is opening up their integration to other things, which may also help some of this stuff happen. So I'm kind of excited to see how this goes, and I'm even more excited to see how it goes for stuff when I'm not home, which is where the Apple TV comes into it, is because right now lots and lots of stuff still needs a hub in order to function properly. And that's part of why a lot of people are put off by the Philips light bulbs and some of the other stuff, is because it's expensive, because you have to buy this extra little piece of hardware, and then you have to find a power outlet for it, and you have to find an Ethernet cable for it, or make sure it's close enough to the router but that you can still access it from everywhere. And it's kind of a pain in the neck sometimes. It's gotten a lot easier, but I'm really hoping that it gets easier still once all this stuff really starts rocking with the HomeKit. So I'm hoping maybe this year. I know you guys see a lot of my new favorite phrase from Brian, prayerware, at CES. And what I'm hoping is that some of that stuff actually will be made manifest, you know, this spring, and things will start kicking off that way, and we'll see a bunch more HomeKit stuff. I'm super excited.
We definitely saw a lot of stepping stone technologies.
Definitely. Yes.
So I mean, we're heading towards a good place to be in the home automation space. Yeah. And and I think Apple TV becoming a hub for this stuff would be a step in the right direction for Apple. It's one of the things that Jeff, you and I were saying that we wish that Apple would step it up on.
Yeah, we totally talked about that. And what I'm thinking is that knowing how Apple has done product cycles in the past, where they give us a little, they see how it works, and then they start iterating on that. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if this is the first step towards turning Apple TV into a full-on HomeKit hub, as opposed to just a remote bridge into your HomeKit setup.
I actually can't imagine otherwise, to be honest. Let's hope.
I'm thinking that right now it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem, like because the Apple TV hasn't officially done it yet. There's a lot of stuff that's like, this will be awesome someday if they ever get off the stick with the Apple TV. And part of the reason the Apple TV hasn't come out and let fly with full-on HomeKit is because they're like, so what if we do this? Nobody's got anything that you can do with it yet.
Well, and then we also have the problem that the HomeKit chips that Apple has been working on, they're just now getting out to many of these companies. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of product device makers have been waiting to see what's going to happen as Apple finalizes the software. And so, my guess is that later this year, the whole Apple fit into home automation will be a lot more concrete than it is today.
I hope so. I can't wait.
Brian, you're about to say something?
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are pretty much out of time. So thanks to both of you for joining me today. And I'm so glad that we got to see a little bit of delicious irony coming out of AT&T. And we were able to give Kelly some validation as well. So Kelly, thank you for being here.
I was right.
Yeah, the Kelly validation dance. And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Kelly was right.
The Kelly validation line dance.
Exactly. I like it.
All right. And we will see everyone else tomorrow. Thanks for listening.